The ongoing bad news about opioid drugs tends to obscure the reason people take them in the first place, which is to get rid of pain. And they do address the pain people feel, but the opioids are like the opium-based drugs they mimic. They are addictive, and people have to take more of them over time to keep the pain at bay. People do break the addiction and get off the drugs, and that's the point in the story that our first guest studied. Dr. Travis Lovejoy is an assistant professor of psychiatry at the Oregon Health and Science University School of Medicine, and he's a clinical psychologist with the VA Portland Healthcare System. His research focused on the pain and what patients notice about that when they are no longer taking opioids. Dr. Lovejoy, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me this morning.
The numbers are continue to be shocking. 60,000 people died of opioid abuse in 2016, so there's obviously plenty of impetus to do something. How did you decide what kind of research to do?
You know, we've been interested in looking at outcomes when people go off of opioids, and one of the key outcomes that I think is of interest to patients and many other stakeholders is what happens to people's pain when they ultimately go off of opioids. So that was the impetus for this particular study.
And so how did you choose to go about the study itself?
Sure. So what we did is we looked at a national sample of patients within the veterans healthcare system, and we examined their medical records. And one of the pieces of data that are obtained from the medical record are individuals' pain scores. So when someone goes in for a medical appointment, they, among other things, are asked to rate their pain, what their current pain is, from a scale of 0 to 10, where 0 is no pain, and 10 is worst pain imaginable. And these data are captured and put into the medical record. And so then we're able to go back in and look at people's reports of pain over the course of time. And so what we did is we examined people's pain in the year prior to discontinuation from opioids. And these are people who've been on opioids for at least a year and sometimes many years or even a decade or more. And then when these people went off of opioids, we then examined the pain that they experienced over time for 1 year after discontinuing opioids. And we compared the two.
Okay, so this is all self-reported, though. So, I mean, pain being subjective, I mean, you really can't tell other than what the person says, this is how I felt at that time.
Yeah, it's a great question because pain is a subjective experience. If you take two individuals who have the same injury, they will report experiencing different levels of pain. And then ultimately, when pain becomes more chronic, people also report different levels of pain to the same stimulus, or sometimes even the absence of a stimulus that would be known to cause pain.
So how broad a range of health issues are we talking about here within the, was it 600 patients that you looked at?
Yeah, 600 patients. And these are individuals who are predominantly experiencing what we call musculoskeletal pain. So this would be back pain, neck pain, knee pain, and so forth. There are some individuals who had headache pain, such as migraines, and other people who had neuropathic pain, so fibromyalgia or other types of diffuse pain or pain in the extremities that is primarily neurological.
So just as an aside, are pain levels reported higher for back issues and lower for limbs or vice versa? Or is there some part of the body that is generally reported with higher pain levels than any other?
You know, it really varies. And there isn't any compelling data to suggest that one type of pain is more severe than another. It really is an individual experience.
And outside of seeing a specific injury, I mean, is it really hard to detect pain in any sort of physiological way?
Well, I mean, many of the individuals who experienced pain in this particular study had very clear injuries at some point in their life, and sometimes it's just wear and tear on the body over time as well. As people age, some of these aches and pains start to become more prominent. So it really, really varied, but there were a variety of different catalysts for the pain in this sample.
And so the sample of 600, all of them took opioids at some point, is that right?
That's exactly right, yeah. For at least a year was our requirement for them to be in the study.
At least a year. And they all got off of them?
And they all got off of them, yes. And some of them got off of them, kind of a minority of the sample, about 15%, got off of the opioids because they wanted to. They felt that it wasn't perhaps helping their pain, or they felt that there were other approaches that they would rather try. They had concern about becoming addicted to the medications. But the vast majority, 85%, were actually discontinued by the clinical team. And these would be primarily for reasons that we would consider opioid misuse. So taking more medications than prescribed, asking for early refills constantly, perhaps using other illicit substances.
How long does it generally take to separate from opioids, and does it usually a multi-stage attempt?
Yeah, often it is. I mean, it's some individuals will work with patients, clinicians will work with patients to taper them rather quickly, particularly if there are indications that continuing to prescribe opioids could be harmful to the patient if they're using other substances that might be contraindicated with the opioid medication. But for some patients, a taper might occur over the course of many months or even a year. A year or more, yeah.
All right, so a long time. Dr. Yeah. Travis Lovejoy is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is with the Oregon Health and Science University School of Medicine, OHSU. He's an assistant professor of psychiatry, and he's also a clinical psychologist in the VA Portland healthcare system. We're talking about opioids and pain levels pre- and post-opioid use, and you might have some questions about this yourself or some life experiences to share. We'd like to hear from you by phone, 800-838-3760, or by email, jx@jeffnet.com. Now, the patients who reported getting off opioids, is it possible any of them were still taking things outside of the healthcare system?
It's quite possible, and that was one of the limitations of our study. We weren't able to obtain information about what they were doing outside of the VA. So it's possible that they perhaps went to another healthcare system, or that they may have even obtained opioids through other means.
All right, but officially, anyway, through the VA system, they were not getting anything.
That's exactly right.
All right. So and what kinds of pain reports then once they were off opioids? Because this is really the key to what you studied here.
Well, ultimately what we found is that patients on average did not report changes in their pain from the time they were on opioids to the time they went off opioids. And that's after controlling for a variety of factors such as other non-opioid medications and non-pharmacologic pain treatments that they may have received. So what we're seeing is that people will, when you average out kind of their scores over time, their pain scores over time, it ends up really kind of being a flat line, so there really is no change. But what we do see is that there is a considerable amount of within individual variability. So what I mean by that is that patients sometimes will report a 2 for their pain, and at other times they might report an 8, and it can be quite variable, the levels of pain that they experience. And from anyone who's experienced pain or clinicians who have worked with patients with pain, we know this to be true, that even within a single day, patients will report a considerable amount of variability in their pain. They might wake up and their pain's a 7, and then they get moving a little bit and their pain goes down to a 3, and then maybe they exert themselves a little too much, mowing the lawn or going for a long walk with the dog or whatever the case may be, and their pain spikes back up to a 6. And so we see this oscillation within the day. So it didn't terribly surprise us to see this high level of variability within patients over the course of a year.
And how often during a day are they checking pain, or was it what kind of thing would they report when it changed?
Repeat that question again.
Were they checking daily? Were they checking hourly? I'm just trying to figure out the intervals
Exactly. No, they weren't checking more than one time a day. So these would be any time a patient comes in to a VA hospital. So for some patients, they might have several reports of pain over the course of time, if that's how many times they came into the hospital. For other patients, it might be 50 times they came into the hospital and thus reported their pain. So it was somewhat variable, but it wasn't within the same day that they were reporting pain.
So it sounds like then that when they're taking the opioids, they have an island of relative freedom from pain. But then when they're off the island, they're basically back to where they were.
Well, I think ultimately what we see with many patients when they're taking opioids is that they have an immediate response of pain relief when they take the opioid. But as that wears off throughout even a single day, sometimes the pain can spike back up again, at which point they may take another opioid, or if they aren't prescribed that many opioids in the day, they will oftentimes endure pain or maybe use other approaches to manage that pain. So what we're seeing is that, yes, that the patients likely do experience some pain relief, but when you look at pain over the course of time, sometimes the opioids just aren't working to the extent that they would want to relieve pain completely throughout a day.
And so even within the prescribed and recommended dosage levels, I mean, over the course of the year or more that any of these people were taking opioids, did their dosage increase because they were just trying to keep up with where they'd been?
The vast majority of these patients did not increase their opioid dose. So there's, you know, during this period of time, certainly through the present, there has been a movement to try to reduce the dose that people are prescribed. You mentioned early on in the show that as people take opioids, that over time they will develop a tolerance to them and that they would need to take a higher dose in order to experience the same pain relief. Well, what we know is that when people get to too high of a dose, it becomes a pretty significant risk factor for intentional or unintentional opioid-related overdose. So there has been a movement to try to decrease the doses which patients are prescribed on a chronic basis. And so within this sample, we really didn't see too many increases in opioid prescribing during that time. If anything, it stayed flat or over time was decreasing.
Travis Lovejoy, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a professor, assistant professor of psychiatry at Oregon Health and Science University. We're talking about pain after opioids. Here's a call from Steve in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Howdy. I've gone to a number of surgeries and have been put on opioids for up to 2-3 months and never really felt the need for them after I was off of them. I'm wondering if some people just are not subject to, you know, addiction.
All right, just not subject to addiction. Let's find out about that. Dr. Lovejoy?
Could you repeat the question one more time, please?
He had taken opioids a couple of times for up to 3 months at a time, he said, but when he got off, he never really felt the need while he was on to continue. I mean, are some people not subject to addiction is the question.
Absolutely, and it sounds like from the pattern that the caller is describing that opioids were not necessarily taken on an everyday basis or multiple times throughout the day, but rather on an as-needed basis. And we know that when people are taking them on an as-needed basis, sometimes it will the tolerance will not develop, and so many of these individuals will not feel the physiological addiction to keep taking these because they're really not taking them on a regular basis. They're taking them really more on an as-needed basis.
So what I'm trying to figure out here is how your research might fit in with other bits of research that we hear about, because people are doing things all the time that tell us new things about the world around us. The recent report that over-the-counter pain meds, you know, the naproxens and the ibuprofens, often work as well as opioids. Is there any element of those observations in what your work found?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't specifically isolate particular medications to try to determine which were the most effective at managing individuals' pain after discontinuation from opioids. That is a future line of research that we're hoping to explore. One of my colleagues, Aaron Krebs, who is an internal medicine physician at the Minneapolis VA, recently published the results of one of her randomized clinical trials that compared opioids to non-opioid medications such as naproxen, ibuprofen that you mentioned, over a period of a year, and this was in the Veterans Health Administration as well. And ultimately, they found that after a year on these different medications, the patients who were on opioids fared no better than the patients who are on non-opioid medications in terms of pain interference, which is the extent to which pain interferes with one's daily activities. And the individuals who are on non-opioid medications actually experience less pain at the course of at the end of the year.
It seems like each medication that you could take, though, has some drawback to it with a part of the body that doesn't particularly fare well, for example, with some of the NSAIDs. Is there any pain medication that is free of any risk?
You know, I think that there probably is a risk for virtually any pain medication if taken in excess. And, you know, one of the key points is that patients should work with their physicians, even if they're taking over-the-counter medications. Those can be taken in excess. And so it's really important to work with one's healthcare team to make sure that the types of medications you're taking are not in excess or not going to be detrimental to your health given other conditions that you might be living with.
So, Travis, based on what information you got from looking at the healthcare records of the 600 VA patients, what are the recommended courses of treatment after opioids?
Right. So there are a number of non-pharmacological pain treatment approaches that could be of benefit. So individuals who receive physical therapy and some home exercise programs might be effective for various types of musculoskeletal pain, such as back pain, neck pain, other joint pain. There are a variety of other approaches which we would consider complementary, and these would be things like chiropractic, massage, acupuncture. There's a growing body of literature that these particular approaches can be helpful for various types of chronic pain. I mean, there's also pain counseling or pain psychotherapy, and this helps individuals understand the relationship between their emotions and their behaviors and how that impacts their pain. And that can be a really effective approach as well that has a considerable amount of evidence behind it.
Well, that gets into a question about since we're talking about VA patients here. I mean, a lot of this, I mean, when we're talking about things like PT and exercise makes sense for probably anybody who's taking pain medication. But I wonder about the specificity of the injuries. Since these, some of the, you know, obviously service-related, very specific service-related injuries, are some of these things that would be hard to duplicate in a general population?
You know, I think that a lot of the injuries that individuals experience, that they were experiencing here, you're correct. I mean, there could be military and combat-related injuries, which were quite significant. This population that we were studying was predominantly a Vietnam-era population with some individuals in more of the current conflicts where they're experiencing blast injuries and so forth. So it really takes a multimodal approach. I wouldn't say that any one approach is effective, that when you have individuals with very complex injuries that result in pain, there really needs to be a multifaceted effort to be able to address their pain. So it's not just opioid or non-opioid medications. It's not just PT and exercise. It's not just chiropractic, but oftentimes it takes all of those things for the individual.
You did mention some of the patients also, I mean, that for some people that some counseling might help. I mean, were there psychiatric issues with some of the people, the 600 as well?
Yeah, absolutely. It was, you know, over half of the sample had some type of mental health history. And, you know, many of these individuals were involved in ongoing mental health care, which even though it doesn't specifically focus on pain, we do know that improving mental health symptoms also helps improve individuals' pain experience. So, yes, that was one of the treatments that many people received.
So finally, Travis, where do we go from here? What do we do with the information you pulled in through this study?
It's a great question. You know, we're doing some follow-up work right now to better understand patients' experiences as they discontinue opioids. So we're actually following a group of veterans who are on long-term opioid therapy. And when they are tapered or discontinued from opioids, we're going to be talking with them and trying to better understand how they are managing their pain. One of the questions you asked earlier was, well, what kind of treatments might they be receiving outside of the VA? That's something we really don't know anything about and that we'll be looking into, because we want to make sure that if people are being discontinued from opioids here within the VA, that it's not just being handed off to another healthcare system, or that the individuals might be developing other substance misuse related behaviors, because there's been a lot in the news recently about transitions from prescription opioid abuse to abuse of other opioids such as heroin. And we want to make sure that that's not one of the unintended negative consequences that's happening with veterans who are going off of opioids.
All right, more work ahead clearly, but we'll be getting some more stories down the road that go beyond just the numbers we got here. Dr. Travis Lovejoy is an assistant professor of psychiatry at the OHSU School of Medicine and a clinical psychologist in the VA Portland Healthcare System. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.